Academy Award-winning filmmaker Morgan Nebel's latest documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, takes an intimate look at America's favorite neighbor, Mr. Fred Rogers. A portrait of a man whom we all think we know, the documentary is an emotional and moving film that takes you beyond zip-up cardigans and the land of make-believe and into the heart of a creative genius who inspired generations of kids with compassion and limitless imagination.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
Won't You Be My Neighbor is the closing night presentation of the Berkshire International Film Festival at the Mahaley Theater on Sunday, June 3rd at 7 o'clock. The film will be followed by a Q&A with the producer of the documentary, Nicholas Ma. Nicholas, son of Yo-Yo Ma, knew Fred Rogers since he was a toddler, and we are thrilled to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Nicholas, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
So glad to be here.
So how did this whole thing come to be for you?
It's such an interesting question because a project like this has so many beginnings. You know, we felt very fortunate to get launched out of Sundance and to sort of hit the ground running. But the real beginning of it probably was a number of years ago when Morgan was working on another film, the film on which we met, called Music of Strangers, also which played at BIFF. And he was interviewing my father, the cellist Yo-Yo, and asked him, how did he learn to be a public figure? And my father said, well, Mr. Rogers taught me. And I think that set a series of gears turning for Morgan, and we worked on a couple of small things. And a couple of years ago, he called me up and he said, am I crazy? Or would this be an incredible project to undertake? And I think before the words were out of his mouth, I said, let's do it. So I think that was probably the most logical beginning. But I think with most things that are Fred related, the beginning probably goes back earlier than that. And in my family, it goes back to my father seeing me and my sister sitting in front of the television and watching Fred, and that being the place that my mother could put the two of us while she was making dinner, and realizing that there was something very special about this man. And similarly for Morgan, going back to his childhood and growing up with Fred as that special friend. So I think, you know, most stories with Fred end up having their antecedent with children.
You, of course, not only grew up watching him on television, but he was a part of your life. He knew your father, you knew him. You were on the show at a very, very young age.
What other things do you do with your dad?
I play chess.
Chess.
Mm-hmm. Soccer.
Soccer.
Go to the park. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever play the piano?
Yep.
Do you? Because you are learning the piano now, aren't you? I thought so. Would you play something for me?
Yep.
Would you and your dad play something together for me? What?
The skeeter as well.
Oh, okay. I'll just sit right here and watch both of you.
Okay, Nicholas, now I haven't done this on the cello before, so you just give me
one, two, go.
Okay.
And then to sustain that friendship, as most friendships with him would be sustaining friendships, it just has to be a special thing, which would make a project like this, I would think, very personal.
That's exactly right. We actually just screened the film for a whole group of folks in Pittsburgh. And the opportunity to share this film, which is so personal to me, with people for whom Fred was so very real, was an extraordinary opportunity. And I think that's always the fear, that when something is a personal story, that either it doesn't communicate to the broader, you know, world, or worse yet, communicates only a sliver of this person who represented so much to so many. But I think we felt very pleased that it seemed to reflect people's memories and feelings about Fred.
That video of you playing not only with your father, but playing the piano where your hands are on the piano and Mr. Rogers are right next to yours, I mean, that's a very powerful image.
Yeah, there was a gentleness to Fred that was not because he was by nature a gentle man, but because it was a value that he believed in. And I think as a child going there, I was terrified, right? Here is this guy who I've seen only in two dimensions on a television screen, in three dimensions and life size. And he somehow managed to let me find my way to him, to the point where things that had always been intimidating for me, even at that young age, like playing with my father, seemed like the most natural thing to do. And sitting next to someone who was a hero for me felt like the most comfortable thing to do. And there is a kind of grace and beauty to Fred that allowed him to do that with me, and I think with, you know, millions of other people.
One of the things that I find so interesting, and I was thinking about this and looking at some of the clips, is that he played a great role in my life, not only on television, but as I was starting my broadcasting career, was really a mentor to me and would talk to me many, many times over a course of a month or a day or a year. And we had a friendship, and he was always asking how things were going and what was going on, and had such interest and such respect. And then you realize, well, you think you have something very special, which of course you do, but then you realize that, oh, he's doing this for 100 other people that day too.
Yeah.
That's what's so incredible about him.
I think that's right. I think it's incredible. I think, you know, it's also one of the issues we talk about in relation to his two sons, who are both wonderful people and whom I admire immensely. It's hard to share your father with that many people.
When you think about in telling the story, was there a challenge in telling a story that you think people didn't know about him?
Was there a challenge in telling, in making it feel fresh, you mean?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, because I think so many of us who grew up watching him feel that we know him so well. Was there a challenge in finding the material and finding the narrative arc that said, okay, this is who this man is, and telling that story that, yes, is indeed fresh?
Yeah, I think there were two challenges, and this is where working with an extraordinary director like Morgan makes it all seem so easy. But I think there were two challenges that we worried about very much from the beginning. The first was not wanting to try and sensationalize the story of Fred. As Joanne, his widow, is fond of saying, I would never want to read a biography on Fred because it would be the most boring book ever written, you know, and not wanting to sort of pretend that he was someone that he wasn't. But at the same time, how do you find drama that's compelling about someone for whom his values didn't waver? That's not where the drama of the story lies. And I think that was really the central challenge in making the film, right? We didn't want to make a film that was a nostalgia fest or a hagiography of Fred. We wanted to make a film about someone whose values may have been static, but for the world around whom was not terribly static. And who struggled with that and struggled with finding his own place in a world that seemed at times to be racing past the ideas and values that he held.
And such an advocate for children and understanding children, and seemed that he was oftentimes going up against a David and Goliath fight of trying to tell people and let them know about the fragility of children and what the responsibility we have when we deal with them.
Absolutely. And yet boiling that down to a level of simplicity that makes it seem unconscionable to behave otherwise. He actually used the word evil to describe people who would make you feel less than you are. You know, he described that as the greatest evil. And of course, being Fred, he went on to say, and the greatest good is to remind people that they are loved and capable of being lovable as people. And I think that, you know, that's a pretty simple concept, but it's a tall order, I think, at the same time.
It was also a great practicality. I mean, he expected that evil, right? I mean, he knew that was out there. He just understood it.
Yeah. I think, you know, he came of age in this funny moment where, you know, television was becoming a medium where child development was becoming a field, you know, all in the context of a sense of ministry in his own life that I think allowed so much of that to come together. And I think I like to think, you know, Fred's parents adopted a daughter when Fred was a teenager. And so Fred I think, got to live a kind of half-life where he saw someone growing up at the same time as he was still growing up. And so that connection to childhood, I think, remained very strong.
The other thing that I find so interesting about his life is the work that he did in television, starting out at NBC and working in those hallowed halls and working with Kate Smith and the Hit Parade and the different shows that he worked on. That brought him to the forefront of public broadcasting, but that he was a broadcaster. He was a very, very good, with all that there is about him as far as his dedication to children and his work with children and advocacy, also at the end of the day, a really, really good broadcaster.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said for learning a medium just as it's coming up. You sort of start, you understand it inside and out. And I think he really, really understood and enjoyed it. You know, we had a wonderful conversation about when they first started thinking about cuts and when the precision and where you could make cuts started to grow, that became this fascination for him about being able to be even more specific about the stories he was telling and the way he would inflect them. You know?
Did he, in your knowledge and in working on this film, did you find, was there ever any disparity in the stories that you heard or was everybody pretty much on the same page in talking about him?
You know, to your point of having him as a mentor, he represented different things to different people. And the story that you hear about, the perspective that you hear about Fred from his widow or from his children is different from his close colleagues, is different from people like David Biancooley or Tom Junod, who, for whom it was a meaningful relationship and friendship, but who probably weren't quite as close. And I think you see those different perspectives, and I think that helps you assemble a three-dimensional picture of a person. But they weren't inconsistent, you know. No one said, no, he never had a temper, because he did occasionally have a temper, and that was a part of him too, you know. But I think, you know, people saw different elements of him. And I think that's what's fun about assembling a portrait like this, is finding those unusual perspectives that shed light on someone that you might not otherwise see.
I remember having a long conversation with him the day that Jim Henson died. And
yeah,
we talked a lot about legacy, and it really, mm-hmm. it shook him as to what the legacy of Jim Henson would be and what his own legacy would be. And mm-hmm. he said it would start some really strong internal conversations and then external conversations as to what that legacy would become, which he was working on already. But I'm curious as to, when you look at it and certainly are working with that legacy now and telling the story of how mindful he was of that, especially toward the end of his life, and making sure that the work went on.
Yeah, I think his notion of legacy changed over time, right? He stopped doing the show in the 70s and then took it up again at the end of the decade. And he stopped because he felt like he had said enough, and he recorded a set of episodes that would help transition children from the last episode of the series back to the first, showing all the tapes so that it wouldn't be confusing if a child saw a rerun. He had a sense of, okay, you know, here, this is complete. And I think as he got older, that sense of what it means to be complete changed. And he kept on striving to find new, you know, as Hedda, one of his close colleagues, would say, the outside of children have changed, but the insides haven't. And he would find new frontiers for exploring how those outsides affect children, whether it's superheroes or divorce or death. And I think at the end, you know, even as he sort of kept charting new territory, the world was moving faster around him. And one of the first stories that Joanne told Morgan and me and Karen when we first went down there, he said on his deathbed to Joanne, am I a sheep or am I a goat? And of course, that's from the gospel, right? Will I be of the kingdom of heaven or not? Mm. And the fact that even at that moment, he's still worried about it is telling. And of course, Joanne looked down and said, oh, Fred, if ever there was a sheep, you're one. But that concern, have I given fully enough of myself to make a difference, is, I think, something is an engine that, you know, both powered his work, but I think also unsettled him.
And there is a philosophy, right? I mean, there is a philosophic air to him and his beliefs and what he was broadcasting and dispensing and offering children in their development.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there was a philosophy derived from so many different sources, right? Religious sources, philosophical sources, scientific sources, you know, all sort of stirred into the pot. I think, you know, I feel so grateful to have been working on this film for the past couple of years because it's this reminder that we as a country can be unified around ideas that are strong, not weak. And his philosophy was not a weak philosophy. You know, I think every day about something he said in the Dartmouth commencement close to the end of his life, where he reminded people to remember those people who encouraged them to be true to the best within them. And it's these sort of simple words, but so Fred, right? It's not true to whatever's within them. It's true to the best. And it's not true to some external notion of what is best, some foreign notion of what is best, but to the best that already exists within you. And, you know, that's a standard which is both very hard to meet, but also eminently achievable for everybody. And I like to think that that is something that we could say could bring us together again and is at least for me, very much a part of his intellectual legacy.
Someday I'll be able to watch that Dartmouth commencement speech without crying. I haven't been able to quite do it yet, but
no, nor I. Yeah.
One of the things that also is to that idea of philosophy, but also simplicity, is when he recorded a very short announcement in regards to 9/11.
You know, it happens so often. I walk down the street and someone 20 or 30 or 40 years old will come up to me and say, "You are Mr. Rogers, aren't you?" And then they tell me about growing up with the neighborhood and how they're passing on to the children they know what they found to be important in our television work. Like expressing their feelings through music and art and dance and sports and drama and computers and writing and invariably we end our little time together with a hug. I'm just so proud of all of you who have grown up with us. And I know how tough it is some days to look with hope and confidence on the months and years ahead. But I would like to tell you what I often told you when you were much younger. I like you just the way you are. And what's more, I'm so grateful to you for helping the children in your life to know that you'll do everything you can to keep them safe and to help them express their feelings in ways that will bring healing in many different neighborhoods. It's such a good feeling to know that we're lifelong friends.
I mean, that was what, a minute and a half?
Yeah.
But it said so much and it was so powerful and it was so comforting and soothing. And I don't know how, I remember thinking at the time of how do you get to a place where you can see things that way and release any anger, concern, and still just say the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, he worried about it that day, I think. You know, Margie, his longtime producer and one of the most beautiful speakers, you know, reminded us that on that day he was wondering whether this actually made a difference or not. And, it's, you know, it's startling because I think that those 90 seconds are so carefully chosen.
Did he feel an obligation to do that, an obligation to speak? Because he was speaking to us. He was speaking to the people who grew up watching him.
I think it weighed on him. And, you know, I always wary of armchair psychology, and
right.
I recognize that, you know, on some level, part of what makes the opportunity in a film is to say, here's what's known, and you get a chance to draw your own conclusions about this person. I can just say, for my part, I'm glad that he took that mantle, even though I recognize, I think it came at a cost.
I haven't had the privilege of seeing the film yet, and I look forward to it. Did you look into and because also part of that story, and I remember talking to him about this, was how he faced his illness, how he faced his death.
Yeah.
You addressed that.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Joanne puts it well. She said he thought a lot about dying well.
Hmm.
You know, I think he was pretty relentless in holding himself to standards that many of us would give ourselves a little bit more room to maneuver, perhaps. But he was, I don't know, maybe that, I don't know if that comports with your memory of him as well. But.
No, I think so. I was wondering if it's something that you addressed directly of that is, because it seems that it's very consistent with how he lived his life, was also how he how he dealt with his own, of knowing that he was going to die.
Yeah, no, I think we try to address it or at least speak around it, but there's only so much time in a
sure.
in a doc. I know it came up in all the interviews. People wanted to share how he shared that news with them and how, you know, there was a very touching story where he said, where he asked people to keep it quiet, but he said, but please tell one person because you also need one person to talk to. And I think there was something really, you know, there's a kind of rabid sensibility of thinking about how an idea is transmitted and received that was just in his blood at that point.
What do you hope you accomplish with the film and ultimately what an audience gets out of it? An audience that I assume goes to it with great love in their heart for this man.
Oh, well, I think there are two ways of looking at a film like this. One is to walk away and say, oh gosh, things were so much better then and how I miss Fred. And I think that's missing somebody that's gone is unavoidable. But I think the other thing that can happen is a film can be galvanizing to say, maybe there are ways in which I can do better. And maybe those ways aren't as hard as I thought. And I can say that I can't say how audiences should or will react, but I can say that's how the film affects me. That every time I walk out of it, I think, huh, I bet there are one or two things that are small that I could do better. And I think maybe walking out of this, I have the courage to try.
Nicholas Ma is a producer of the film Won't You Be My Neighbor, which will be the closing film at the Berkshire International Film Festival. Nicholas, what a great honor and pleasure to speak with you this morning. Thank you so much for sharing your time, and we look forward to seeing the film.
Absolutely. I look forward to your seeing it as well. And thank you again for giving me this opportunity to chat about it. It means a lot to all of us who made it. So.
A great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks. Take care.
Won't You Be My Neighbor is the closing night presentation of the Berkshire International Film Festival at the Mahawi Theater on Sunday, June 3rd at 7 o'clock. Nicholas Ma will have a Q&A following the showing of the film. Find out more at BIFMA.org. BIFFMA.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.